The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Sometimes it's the normal, sometimes it's the abnormal, and sometimes it's the paranormal, but it's always beyond reality. Welcome to the program. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm your host, JV Johnson. Thanks for being here tonight. My apologies out to our YouTube audience. Had a false start there on the stream. Not sure why. Sometimes that happens. This technology stuff is not always perfect, that's for sure. But we're going to be talking about something rather interesting tonight. If you've watched the History Channel anytime recently, you've probably seen a television show that seems to be on constantly, because it's good, called Ancient Aliens. And our frequent guest, Scotty Roberts, has been on that program. Many of the other people we featured on Beyond Reality have been on the show as well. But they talk about the notion that aliens had visited this world long before their human civilization was organized and certainly at a technologically advanced level. And in fact, in some cases, they believe that these ancient aliens helped introduce technologies to the human race, made it what it was. Some people believe that there's actually alien DNA in our DNA. And that was part of the process. Our guest tonight, Jock Doubleday, believes that the Earth was actually terraformed by some other ancient civilization. And he says he has evidence, he's found it all over this globe, that he can talk about to support that notion. And that's what our conversation will be tonight. Was the Earth terraformed? Was the moon put there intentionally? Is it artificial? It's all part of the same discussion, and that's what we'll be chatting about tonight. We will take your phone calls later in the show at 844-687-7669. And that'll be in the second hour of the program. If you have questions or want to offer some comments on our discussion, again, the guest tonight, Jock Doubleday. Looking ahead on the show, just so you know what we've got coming up tomorrow night, of course, is a best of program. Monday night, Dr. Ming Chi will be with us. Ming is an author of a new book called Angels of Rainbow Bridge, Life After Transition, which was written to help ease the pain of losing a pet. Tuesday night's program, Frank Bennett will be here. Frank is an author and a Bible teacher. Frank will talk about his book called Encounter with the Aberdeen Wild Man. He'll also talk about his biblical perspective on the paranormal. And a lot of great stuff coming up after that. Of course, here we've always got interesting conversations. Please visit our social media. Go to Beyond Reality Radio on Facebook. Also, JV Johnson on Facebook. Give both of those pages a like. And then also go to YouTube, find the YouTube channel, because it's a great resource if you want to listen to some of our back interviews or back discussions, older ones. I think they go back a good 18 months or so on the YouTube channel. Plus, there's some special content there. Just go to YouTube and search for JV Johnson, or I think you can find it if you search Beyond Reality Radio as well. There are like 350 interviews on that on the YouTube channel. It's a great place to be. Please subscribe to that channel. Hit the notification icon. That'll let you know when we go live or when we upload special content. Appreciate all of that. All right, we'll go to break. When we come back, we'll bring in our guest for the night. Again, we'll be talking tonight with Jock Doubleday. We're talking about the Earth and the notion that it may have been terraformed. It may have been built for life. We'll see. That's up next on Beyond Reality Radio.
Look out, Rochester. Scaricon is coming for you. The Northeast's leading fan convention for all things pop culture is celebrating its ninth year at the Rochester Riverside Hotel, October 18th through the 20th. Scaricon brings an amazing group of celebrities, panel discussions, film screenings, great vendors, and amazing parties. It's a weekend of fun from start to finish, and it's family-friendly. For more information, visit Scaricon.com and check us out on Facebook. Use the promo code BRR at checkout to save 20% on your admission. That's Scaricon.com, October 18th through the 20th in Rochester, New York.
Jock, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. Great to have you here tonight.
Thank you, JV. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've got a lot of ground to cover, a lot of things to talk about, and you're going to have to walk us through some of this because I think this idea might be new to many people. So let's take it a step at a time. And I noticed something on your website that I need a little bit of an explanation for, and I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but what is Caymanology?
Well, and there's sort of a backstory to that word, which is that I spent 23 months in the Bosnian Pyramid Complex. 19 of those months, I was the official videographer for Archaeological Park Foundation, which is a Bosnian NGO nonprofit that oversees excavation there in the Visoko area. And so kamen is the Bosnian word for stone. And I decided that because so many researchers in modern times are researching the idea of artificial stones, stones created by the ancients, for instance, possibly some of the stones in the Giza Plateau area, the Giza pyramids, that I would give a name to what the independent researchers were doing. Because we don't have a name for a discipline that studies artificial stones. We have geology, which is the study of natural stones. Then we have lithics, which is the study of worked stones like arrowheads. And then we have this upswell of independent researchers across the globe who are beginning to realize that much of what we had thought was carved blocks that form pyramids or carved stones that form other structures in ancient sites, that we had thought that these were natural blocks, were actually molded concrete. So that's what kamenology is. It's the study of ancient artificial stones.
So let's talk a little bit about the Bosnian pyramid complex, because you spent a lot of time there. That's kind of at the core, from what I understand, of a lot of what we're going to be talking about. Where exactly is it, and what exactly is it that we're talking about?
Well, the Bosnian Pyramid Complex was discovered in 2005 by Dr. Sam Ozonagic, who was a Bosnian native, and he had been going around the world. He was a real-life Indiana Jones before he even discovered the pyramids in Bosnia. And so he had already written books on pyramids around the world, ancient sites around the world in many different countries. He came back to his own country, and he was in this little town of Visoko, and he saw this hill that looked like it had some geometry to it, and he took out his compass and saw a north orientation to the northern side, and he said, "That's a pyramid, you know, and it's a forested hill, so it didn't look to anybody else like a pyramid." In Bosnia, the reason that these pyramids had not been discovered before this was because the stones, for instance, on the Giza Plateau that form the pyramids there, the structures are obviously built. Whereas in Bosnia, the materials are different, and the way they made the pyramids and other structures was with clay and alternating clay and clay stones instead of these obvious blocks. And then, over time, the soil accumulated, and then trees grew, and just looked like a natural hill. You know, I mean, all the pyramids there looked like natural hills. And so, for him to come out and say those are pyramids, and he named two pyramids on that one day, was just, he knew he was going to set himself up for ridicule, and that's what he got. But you know, little by little, the Bosnian Pyramid Complex has been coming into the mainstream, not the academic mainstream, but sort of the mainstream discussions online, because we see that the scientific evidence shows that there are pyramids and other ancient structures there in Visoko.
So I have to assume that the pyramids of Giza may have suffered the same fate if there was maybe more vegetation. It was in a climate and a soil structure that actually could support that type of growth. It's just not the case for Giza, which is why those pyramids were a little more obvious, I guess.
Well, right. That's the climate in Bosnia is super, super wet. I mean, so there's just endless growth there. And you've got the desert in Egypt, right? So everything's laid bare. And in Bosnia, the building materials were slightly different. So every structure is made from alternating clay, which is the soft clay layers, which is presumably for earthquake mitigation, and then hard baked claystone layers, so back and forth between those all the way up the structures. And then on the Pyramid of the Sun, which was that first pyramid that Dr. Sam Osmanagic found, at the very top level, there's concrete that covers the whole pyramid, and up to four layers, crisscrossing layers of concrete. And that concrete is bound by clay. So clay is the primary ingredient of all the three different types of layers in that pyramid, and it's the primary ingredient of all of the other structures. So this is different from most other pyramid complexes around the world, and that's why it was so hard to see, because the clay, if you just dig through it, it looks like a sedimentary structuring or strata, you know? So it's not fully obvious these are artificial stones. You know, when people would dig for their house foundation and they'd find these stones, it wasn't fully obvious that these are artificial because each stone is different. I have an article online called No Two Stones Are the Same, and it talks about the fact that each stone in those claystone layers, in every single structure in the complex, hundreds of millions of stones, everyone is different. Everyone is unique. Everyone's a different size. If it's in a layer, the stones are of similar thickness to the one to the right and the left, you know? But the shapes are slightly different. They're not perfect Roman sort of right-angle shapes in general. There's a lot of curving in the complex, with the stones in the complex. There's curving of the layers themselves. There's curving... they're sloping upward and spiraling around the structures, so the layers are spiraling around the structures. They're also inclined into the structures for structural strength. So there's so many different angles going on in these layers, and it's much, much different from the usual structuring.
Has there ever been any substantial excavation of any of these pyramids in this complex?
Yes, that's what... the Archaeological Park Foundation has been doing for, 14 years. So they've been literally excavating not just the surface of pyramids and tumuli there, but they've been excavating the tunnel system that was found by Dr. Sam Osmanagic. He asked some children that were native to Visoko if they knew of a tunnel or a cave that they played in. And they said, yeah, there's one right up here. So he just went there, and there's this little tiny, like a crawl hole for a kid. I mean, if you're an adult, you could barely sort of squeeze through it for a few meters, and that was it. He started to excavate the loose fill-in material. It was gravel, basically, from the river. But it was way up above the riverbed. So he was excavating the stuff, and he found a domed ceiling. And he kept going, and now he's excavated literally hundreds of meters of a labyrinth that heads toward the Pyramid of the Sun, because this is 2.5 kilometers northeast of the Pyramid of the Sun. So the labyrinth is slowly moving toward the Pyramid of the Sun, and eventually it's going to get under, but he's still pretty far away in his excavations. Oddly, 4,600 years ago, estimated by carbon dating, another unknown advanced culture came in, filled this tunnel system to the brim with loose sand and river stones, and this is called the fill-in material, and that's what they've been excavating for 14 years. And no one knows why they filled it in, and no one knows who they were, and no one knows who originally built the tunnel system an estimated 34,000 years ago. That is a date that has been come up with because the carbon dating of material found between blocks on the Pyramid of the Sun is an estimated 34,000 years. And then we assume that Rodney Tunnel Labyrinth was built as part of the complex. That's an assumption. But we do have carbon dating for the dry stack walls that are inside the tunnel as part of the fill-in process. And so we've got that at 4,600 years ago. And so we feel that it's a good date for an approximate date for the filling in of the tunnel, the plugging of it. We just don't know why they did it, we don't know who they were, and we don't know why they left the water channels open, because there are some water channels in there that were not filled in, fully open. So when you bring out the little wall that's plugging the side tunnel where the water channel is, you bring out that material, suddenly it opens up like in a movie, and you've got this beautiful, pristine water channel, and it winds around, and you don't know how long it's going to go. So we explored those on video, so I've got lots of videos of that, because that was my job, to videotape what was happening there. So I'd go on these excursions, and anybody can find these videos, Bosnian Pyramids YouTube channel. And, you know, they'd go along, then they'd stop. Nobody knows why they have water channels in the labyrinth. Nobody knows why the people who filled in the tunnel, the plug it, would have left them open. No one knows how they filled them to the brim, because if we filled in a tunnel today with gravel, it would settle, and there'd be an inch or 2 inches or 5 inches from the ceiling. There wasn't. There was never any gap. It was completely plugged somehow by an advanced technology. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling how much material was brought in, and it's mind-boggling that they thought up a reason to do this. I mean, why would you spend so much energy to plug a tunnel, you know?
And, Jock, you had mentioned that the best estimates based on carbon dating and other research of the age of the Bosnian pyramid complex is about, I think you said, 34,000 years ago?
Correct.
Give us a sense of what the state of the human race was at that point. 34,000 years ago puts humans at what stage?
Well, that's a really good question. And the stage of human development was, as far as the orthodoxy is concerned, the academic orthodoxy, was nowhere advanced enough to have been building pyramids or to have any reason to build pyramids or to have the technology to build them, or the manpower. And so the question is, who built them? I've specifically asked Samir about this. I keep in touch with him. I talk to him at least once a week by email, the discoverer of the Bosnian pyramids. And he said, I asked him specifically, I said, is it the position of the foundation that he created, the nonprofit foundation in Sarajevo, that humans built the pyramids? He said, no, that's not our position.
Okay.
In other words, I said, is it your position that ETs built it? He said, we're not making a claim either way. He's not saying that humans, he's not saying that the foundation is claiming that humans built them. That's all he's willing to say right now.
Now, let's be fair about this discussion and put this right out on the table. This is a controversial idea. There are people who don't believe that these are actually structures, and they feel that they might be natural formations. But you were there, you videotaped, you witnessed, you dug, and you're firmly believing that these are structures that were created, made by some force of some sort or another, right?
Some intelligence, yes.
And what do you say to the folks who say, who dispute the legitimacy of this stuff?
Well, it's kind of hard to know where to start, because we have so much science that it would take 2 years to read all of it. We've had 5 scientific conferences about the Bosnian pyramids, and they're international scientific conferences where scientists come, they deliver their papers about research they've done in, you know, on various aspects of the Bosnian pyramid complex. Beyond that, we have endless videos, not just that I made, that just many videographers and film crews have made. Of the features themselves, of Rovne Tunnel Labyrinth, which is astounding. It's just astonishing. We've got laboratory analysis of the megaliths. We know the ceramic. They're artificial. Many different independent laboratories have confirmed that these megaliths that were found in Rovne Tunnel, these bizarre shaped things, textured surfaces, are ceramic. And they have a glass, almost a glass-like sheen to them, and not natural stones. So it's endless. There's no way to really know where to start. But what I usually do if someone says there are no pyramids in Bosnia, I just send them a little video I made of some private landowners who have no relationship to the foundation. They're just some people that live in Bosnia. They live on this hill, Visočica Hill, which is now called the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun. But if people don't believe it's a pyramid, then it's Visočica Hill. The landowners are living on this hill. They were digging some clay out to you know, flatten the surface so they could have a patio and drink coffee on and look out the view. And they found some stones, and I went and made a video of that. And you can see that it's this weird, I mean, structuring to the hill that's clearly artificial. And that's just a question of whether you think that some Romans put some stones there, or was it something else? You know, is it part of a pyramid? But that's a beginning to people saying, well, I wonder what it is. I mean, I'm not here to convince anybody that there's pyramids in Bosnia. I'm not even here to convince them of anything at all. I'm a playwright. I don't care if anybody believes a word I say.
Right.
I have nothing to sell. I just know that I was there for 23 months. I was out in the field for 23 months every day. I woke up in this complex where these structures are gigantic. They are always alternating layered of soft clay, which is presumably the earthquake mitigating clay, and then the hard baked clay stone layers. And they're artificial stones. I mean, you can't deny that the stones are artificial. And then you go, well, if they're artificial stones making up these structures, then clearly they're an artificial structure. And if they're oriented to the cosmic north and they have a triangular face, then that's a pyramid. I mean, I don't know, you know, there's just the weight of evidence. We knew that it was a pyramid complex in 2007. It was never a question after that of is there a pyramid in Bosnia. It's what are they for? And there's so much science on that now. That's the exciting part. And that has to do with communication. So, I mean, I can get into that if you want.
Yeah, actually, my next question was going to be, we're talking about structures that were created 34,000 years ago, give or take. You've already kind of answered this, but I want to maybe speculate a little bit and just get a little bit more information about what the theories might be. But the follow-up question would obviously be, who built these?
Right.
And like I said, I know you kind of already said it's an unknown, but there's got to be some theories.
Well, I don't know if there's any specific, you know, intelligence or race, let's say, that has been named by anyone as far as the actual builders. Oddly, when you're on the pyramid, because they've excavated a lot of the concrete slabs on the top surface of the pyramid, and if you go 20 meters to the left to another excavation site, you've got a different style of concrete slabs than you did 20 meters to the right. So I'm thinking to myself, and I've never said this to Semir, but it's obvious. So there's no reason for me to say it. You know, I'm just the videographer and a playwright from America. What do I know? But I'm sure that somebody else has also thought to themselves, I wonder if different races were involved in the building of this structure, whatever one wants to call it. You can call it a hill, you can call it a pyramid. Whatever it is, it's artificial, because you don't have stacked concrete blocks in nature.
Right.
So here you, on this excavation site, on the top of this hill or pyramid, you've got stacked concrete blocks, and then 20 meters to the left, it's one massive slab that goes from your bottom of your foot to your hip. And it's five meters long. And how did they pour it is another question, because it's the same thickness at the bottom of the slab as it is at the top of the slab. And if we tried to pour on a 44-degree hill, it would be much thicker at the bottom of the slab. It's not. So how did they pour it and have it remain the same thickness throughout? That's another question that keeps occurring to me. Then you've got the different style of the knobbiness of the concrete. One excavation site has a lot of big river stones in it, really knobby, and the one with the thicker slabs has much finer grained. Then you go, well, I wonder if it could have been two different engineers from the same race that built, whoever built this in the past, doing two different things for a scientific reason that they had, or maybe just because it was a style that they had, an artistic style, who knows? Or it could have been two different races. And in that case, if it's two different races, maybe there's 100 different races that are helping build a pyramid that's the biggest pyramid in the world so far documented. So mostly we have questions, and that's kind of what drew me. was a mystery, and that's what keeps me involved. If we had answers, I'd just go to the next thing, because I'm interested in the mystery, and all we got in Bosnia is mysteries. But we do have a lot of science, and we do have the beautiful photos and videos of the artificially textured stones that clearly are artificial, and that's just a question of what people want to make of that, you know?
It seems to me there are a couple possibilities here. I mean, there's probably many, but two that seem to be at the top of the list. One would be that there was a human civilization that did have the technology and did have the capability that has disappeared, or there was some type of extraterrestrial alien-type intervention. Any evidence to support either one of those ideas?
Well, this is where it gets even weirder, and you know, I really want to emphasize to your audience that my main thing is writing plays, you know, and screenplays and poetry and children's stories, and I don't have any investment particularly in what anyone else thinks of what I say about the archaeology or the terraforming or that subject. It doesn't matter to me. What matters is that I'm excited about it because I was there. And
I think you're a little more involved than that. I mean, I know that your YouTube channel, you've done a lot of narrative and presentation talking about these ideas, and I think you're in the process of writing a book about it, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
I'm writing a book. Well, it's kind of leaping ahead because the book's called Who Built the Earth. So if you didn't think I was crazy before, now's the time, you know?
Jack, when was it that you were the videographer for all of this, which really is what created an interest in it for you?
Well, I had come out to volunteer for the Bosnian Pyramids project in 2011 for 3 months, and then I came back as the official videographer in 2014, and I worked for 16 months. As that in that capacity, and then I came back again to do some more videography for the foundation for 3 more months, and I stayed another, I think it was 4 months on my own making videos there. So the total in the complex making videos was 23 months. And so we were just about to segue into the terraforming issue, and this is so interesting because if you go outside the complex, which I did all the time because I was always walking from place to place. Most people take a bus or a car, and I didn't have a car, and I wasn't on a tour bus. I was walking to my next video that I was going to shoot for Semir, for the foundation, and I'd see the excavated hills of where the road was, because you know in modern times we take out part of the hill and then we put our road in, and I'd see that all of the hills in or outside the complex were the same. They all had the alternating soft earthquake mitigating clay and the baked claystone layers. In other words, I could see the artificial stones in those hills outside the complex just as I could see them inside the complex. And I thought, well, this is weird. I wonder where it ends. So I took a taxi on my off day. I took a taxi outside the complex. I think it was 14 kilometers west along the Fojnica River. And just to see, you know, I went up the main tributary, and I just had them drop me there. I said, see you later. And then, you know, I walked back after the video was made. But I wanted to see if that riverbed and the hills around it, if that all had the same structuring as the riverbed and the hills in the complex. And it did. So I was like, whoa, I wonder how far the terraforming goes. You know, I wonder how far it's built. I don't know how far it's built. But then I went to Croatia, which is a neighboring country, and Serbia, which is a neighboring country to Bosnia. And I did some exploration there. I didn't explore every inch between the pyramid complex and Serbia, but, you know, I was there looking at a hill. I said, I wonder if this is an artificial hill. And I made a video there, and there's evidence that it is. And you're like, what's the evidence? Well, the evidence is basically the straight-line seams that go through the quote, sedimentary material. In other words, we've got vertical straight-line seams that join the material through what should be sedimentary material that spans eons. In other words, why is there one seam that's a common seam that goes 10 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet straight up through this material, you know, perpendicular to the sedimentation, to sedimentary layers? That doesn't make any sense if you're talking about Mother Nature slowly laying down layers over hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of years, there's no way you'd have the common vertical seam. It just doesn't make any sense. So that was always the thing that tipped me off, and it was similar to what I saw in the complex with the concrete hills outside the pyramid complex, because a lot of the hills were concrete as opposed to the alternating clay and claystone layers. So the concrete was always sectioned with vertical lines. So that was how you knew it was constructed, because it was sectioned. So the ancients were building in sections, and then you go, why would they even do that? Why would they build hills outside a pyramid complex out of concrete that joined to a riverbed that's built? And you're like, I can't think of any reason. I'm a playwright, man. I don't know. But all I could do is look at it and make videos. And so what I'm doing and what I'm passionate about is science in its purest form, which is putting evidence out there, because science is a conversation among persons with evidence, right? And then, to me, I have no investment in being right. It's not that I'm not invested in the passion of the journey of finding out who we are, because I am invested in that. I love it. But it's, I don't care. Like, I want to put the evidence out and go, what the heck is this? And then maybe someone has some ideas and we can progress. If I write a book called Who Built the Earth and it turns out that nobody built the earth and it's totally natural, awesome. Show me it's natural, but I got evidence that it's not natural. So I'm writing a book about it.
We have about a minute here before we have to go to our top of the hour break, and I want to set the stage for this discussion about terraforming. When you say that there's evidence to suggest that the Earth was terraformed, do you mean in the truest sense, in other words, the Earth was a dead planet or a body that couldn't support life, and it was turned into something that could support life? Is that the kind of terraforming we're talking about?
Well, that's possibly sort of the next level of what I'm saying, and what I'm saying is simply that I can't find natural hills anywhere I go. Like, I'm in Texas now, it's all built, and I got pure evidence that shows that it's built everywhere I go, every video I make for hundreds of miles. And then in South Africa, same thing. The hills are built out there. Where Michael Tellinger lives, all those hills are built, and I have evidence of that. And I can give you the video, and you guys can decide for yourself. And so wherever I go, it's terraformed. That's all I know. Why they did it, who the heck knows?
Quick look ahead of what we got coming up in the next couple of shows. Tomorrow night is a best of, as every Friday night is. And Monday night, we'll be talking with Ming Chi, author of the new book, Angels of Rainbow Bridge, Life After Transition. The book was written to help people ease the pain of losing a pet. We've had a lot of pet communicators on the program, pet psychics, and they're very popular topics, and we look forward to doing that again Monday night, so mark that one in your calendars. Tonight, we're talking with Jock Doubleday. We're talking about the idea that the Earth was terraformed. Some of this relates to the Bosnian pyramid complex and some other evidence that Jock has been talking about. And again, Jock, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time tonight. The phone lines are open at 844-687-7669. Now, I want to go back to this idea of terraforming, because I'm getting the impression you're not talking about the terraforming that we would have to do, like, on Mars if we wanted to colonize it. You're talking about more of a sculpting of the Earth?
Yes. And right now I'm staring at a screenshot of a video that I shot in South Africa, because Michael Tellinger had me down there for a month to make some videos with him. And on the 2 days before I left, I had one day where I was just on my own, and I went out into the hills around his community there to see what was there, you know, and just to see if maybe the hills were built. Because from a distance, there's shadows on the hills that make it look like they're stepped. So every 1 or 2 feet, you know, there's a little step down, little step down, little step down. I wonder if these hills are built like the hills in Bosnia are built, you know, the hills near the Bosnian pyramid complex. Now, I want to be clear to your audience that I'm not just saying things. I have videographic evidence and photographic evidence of everything that I'm talking about, and it's just I have 45,000 photos from Bosnia and a few thousand from South Africa and endless videos. They're all on my YouTube site, Jock Doubleday. Don't follow me. I don't care. I'm a playwright. Just come for the information. Follow the information. Go dig in your own yard. Find out if your yard has some weird stuff in it, you know, and make your own video. See, I want to contribute to the scientific endeavor of finding out who we are. You know what I'm saying? And eventually I'll probably write a book, but what if I don't? I don't care. I don't care if I write a book. I have no investment in that. What I care about is pushing evidence out, and if I can do that with a video or this conversation or an article, all of it, which are for free, that's fine for me. So I want to be clear that one of the reasons that I believe scientifically that the hills in South Africa, for instance, are built, all of the hills that I could see there are in Waterval-Bolfen, which is Mpumalanga province, where Michael Tellinger lives, is that all of the layers, all of the stepped layers of the hills, and they're all stepped, is all of the layers are inclined into the structure. And by that I mean that the weight of the stone is leaning in to the structure. No matter what angle of the hill you're on, you can walk all the way around the circumference of a hill. And so in other words, the layers are literally weighted inward for structural strength. And there's no way that Mother Nature would make a hill where all of the layers were weighted inward no matter what face you're facing. It wouldn't make any sense. How would Mother Nature do that? Well, engineers would do that to make sure their hills stayed there. Now, why would an engineer in the distant past make a hill? Why would they make endless hills that span the earth? I have no idea. It seems insane to me, and I'm glad to be on your show because I think that you probably get a lot of people who sound crazy. So I don't sound as crazy as I sound to myself when I talk about this stuff. But, you know, on your show at least, because, you get a lot of, you're dedicated to going beyond the usual, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't think, we don't take the opinion that anyone is crazy when they come on this program. In fact, we encourage the free flow of ideas and discussion, and that's what the program is about. So I appreciate the point you're making, but certainly no one here is going to be judging. So the information is what's important to us as well, and we can make up, and I say we, I mean my audience, can make up its own mind as to whether or not they think there's substance to the ideas.
Exactly. So if people are interested in the South Africa video I made, it's called Elands River, the Artificial Elands River and the Terraformed Hills of South Africa, November 13th, 2015. And you can go along with me on my journey. I try to do real-time exploration so there's as few cuts as possible so that people don't think I'm trying to sort of, you know, do anything weird with cuts to,
right.
to fake anybody out, you know. But then it gets kind of tedious sometimes, mm-hmm. So occasionally there might be a cut. But anyway, as far as Bosnia goes, we have the exact same thing. We have inclination of the claystone layers into the structures. So no matter where you are on the pyramid of the sun, no matter where you are on the pyramid of the moon, no matter where you are on Vratnica Tumulus, it's all the layers are inclined into the structure for structural strength. I got endless photos online. If you just search inclined clay stones, Bosnia, you'll find my stuff. So endless videos, endless photos of the inclination and the spiraling of the layers around the structure. They spiral up. And that's a super, super, super strong, well-engineered, astounding feat of engineering, actually, that the ancients performed. Of course, to them, it might have been child's play. To us, it would be, how in God's name would you do this? With all this material, I mean, it's so much material, first of all. I mean, waking up in the pyramid complex every day for 23 months and seeing these gargantuan structures and realizing that they're built, I mean, it was just like I could never believe how big they were and every day I'd say, oh, my God, I didn't realize yesterday how big they are, and the next day I'd say the same thing. The scale of engineering is shocking, and then you walk outside the complex and you go, it's still going. Where does it end? So I just kept making videos wherever I went. You know, I went to do other things. I was, like I said, I'm a playwright. So I wrote a play about Tesla. I got that translated into Croatian and then Serbian and Croatian because I wanted it to be performed in his native language. So I was going, you know, that's the language that he grew up with, Serbo-Croatian. So, I was in those different countries, and I thought, oh, I'll make some archaeology videos and see if it's built out here, too. And I could always see evidence that it was built. But does it mean that it was built? It doesn't. Does it mean that I'm right about anything? No. It just means that here's some evidence. I just want to push it out there and see what people think. So come to my channel. I've got two. One's my personal channel, Jock Doubleday. Then there's the Bosnian Pyramids YouTube channel. And Samir asked me to make that as kind of a backup channel for his main channel, which is Bosnian Pyramids TV. A lot of those are in the Bosnian language, but there are some English language videos on that one, Bosnian Pyramids TV, as well.
I know we don't have a lot of answers. I know that, you know, we've determined that the structures in Bosnia, anyway, are about 34,000 years old. We don't know who built them. We don't know why they were built per se. But if we look at this and we accept for a moment that it was terraformed, there was some type of intelligence, whether it was an alien race or a human race that has since disappeared, that built these structures. The question is why, and why all over the world? Is there something bigger at play here?
Well, I think it goes back to the Big Bang. And you're like, well, that sounds ridiculous because we're not going to talk about the entire span of the history of the universe, are we? Well, here's the thing. The idea that the Big Bang happened was a really cool idea and everything, but there's no evidence whatsoever now that it happened. And in fact, the evidence shows that it didn't happen with certainty. And that means we have an infinite amount of time before us and probably an infinite amount of time ahead of us. We live in an eternally recurring dynamic universe. I imagine it as a torus, you know, like the donut-shaped torus, the geometrical shape.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the energy coming in from the center, coming out, and eternally moving and changing. So there stars are being born, things are happening, there's dynamic things happening. Plasma filaments are racing across the space and forming new stars, and things are happening. But it's always been here. That means that there's been an infinite amount of time, presumably an infinite amount of time, for advanced races to develop technology to do things like build planets, build homes. And you go, well, okay, well, that's interesting, but maybe that's not true. Well, maybe it's not true. Maybe it is. If it is, what kind of homes would you build? Well, you'd build a home that could protect you from asteroid impacts, cosmic radiation, global flooding, global droughts. In other words, you'd build a home that was hollow. Because we don't live on our roofs or on our walls outside our house. We live inside the house. So there's a lot of evidence that the Earth is hollow, a lot of testimonials. So there's science and testimonials from people who had a lot to lose, reputation-wise, by saying that the Earth is hollow, because then they would be thought of as crazy. And I've written a lot of articles about the hollow Earth. And then you go, well, if the Earth might be hollow, and there might be people living in there, or races living in there, or at least the intention might have been for someone to live in there, then maybe other planets are hollow too. And then you realize, oh my God, there is evidence that other planets are hollow too. Other people have been doing this research for decades. So we have science that's sort of suppressed and buried and hard to find, but it's there, about hollow planets. And then you go, well, maybe that's what's happening, but then the scale of it all is so massive that it's hard to really get one's mind around. And then you go, what's it all for? You know? Well, I mean,
yeah.
Who's literally going to build a planet tomorrow? I mean, what race is going, you know, let's build another planet. Really? What for? Don't we have enough? I don't know. There's too many questions, you know?
Yes. So let's go back to this notion that the Earth is hollow for a second, because we have there's a community of people that believe that is the case. I believe it was Admiral Byrd at the North Pole had reported seeing an entrance into what he believed was a hollow Earth. What other evidence have you seen that supports that idea?
Well, yes. First of all, Admiral Byrd did go to the North Pole, and he found the poles. I think, was it the North Pole or the South Pole, though? I can't remember now. But anyway, he talked about the land beyond the poles. That was his public statement, you know, and so we have him on TV saying the land beyond the poles, and you're like, the land beyond the poles? What the heck does that mean? And then you, when you research him, you realize, oh, he'd been told to say nothing. And this was his way of not saying quite nothing.
Right.
He was trying to get across to us that there's something beyond the poles, which means inside the Earth. So, I mean, that's one interpretation, and people can believe what they want. But like I said, the science of the hollow Earth is you know, there is some evidence that the Earth is hollow, and it's I've got a lot of it in my article. One's called Shielding. Did the ancients layer the surface of the Earth with alternating hard and soft material to protect it from asteroid impacts? That's one article. The other one's called Waiting for the Hollow Earth, which is a companion article to Waiting for the Hollow Moon, and there's two of those, actually. So there's four sort of hollow planet articles that people can look at, and it just directs you to different people who have done real research, real science, and it's just a conversational way to get people sort of into the subject. If our home is hollow, then we have a place to go to protect us from cosmic rays. We have a place to go to protect us from global flooding. We have a place to go to protect us from asteroid impacts. I mean, it's just, it makes sense to be inside one's home.
Let's jump to our phone lines because we're going to run out of time here. This is Mark from New Jersey. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about the possibility that the first chapter of Genesis in the Old Testament is really just an explanation of how extraterrestrials terraformed Earth? So, like, the first day, you know, they found it in a certain situation, they brought it into an orbit or something like that, and the word should be taken literally, but talking about
Yeah. Great question there. Your cell phone's a little bit funky, but I don't know if you got that, Jack. Mark was asking what your opinion was about the Genesis account of terraforming by aliens. It can be interpreted that way. Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. And what's really cool is that this Italian scholar, Mauro Biglino, who's still alive, was hired by the Vatican, the publishing house of the official publishing house of the Vatican, to translate the Bible word for word, the best version of the Bible that they had in their opinion. And they said, we want you to translate this word for word and give us a literal translation of the best version of the Bible that we have. And he said, okay. He had no agenda, you know. He found aliens, spaceships, all sorts of things like that throughout the Bible. And as he began his translation, and he would send the publishing house his chapters, after he had done that for a few chapters, a few books of the Bible, they fired him. So that was Mauro Biglino. Now, he is actually, interestingly, in a conference with Semir Osmanagic in Italy in October of this year, talking about ancient history. So they're all going to be together. Michael Telger will be there in Italy. It'll be in, there's one in Bologna and one in Milan.
Jock, where do the pyramids in Giza fit into all of this? Are they related to this Bosnian pyramid complex?
Well, so many researchers who are, in-depth, sort of scientific-minded, mathematical-minded researchers have done Earth grid, ley line,
mm-hmm.
Research. Hugh Newman has a great book called Earth Grids, and that shows that the pyramids are part of a network. And you go, well, not you, but a person might say, what kind of network are you talking about, bro? Because what in God's name would the ancients be doing with a network of pyramids? I mean, what would that be for? Well, then you have the Bosnian pyramid complex researcher Goran Majanovic, who's a Serbian electrical engineer who came out to do research on the Pyramid of the Sun. And four different scientific teams had already found a column of energy coming, a beam coming out of the top of the Pyramid of the Sun, a very distinct edge to the beam, nine meters wide, obviously, I don't have that mathematical mind. Numbers escape me, but I think it was 9 meters wide. All the teams found the beam in the same place. They all had the same measurement. It's 28 kilohertz. And then Goran said, I want to measure the shape of the beam. So he sent a drone up with different instruments, and he had the drone go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, then a little bit higher, back and forth, back and forth. And what he found was that the beam was not a column of energy, like we would imagine, but a repeating ellipsoid-shaped beam, which essentially tells us that from the side it would look like a double helix spiraling upward and perhaps spiraling inward. In other words, the energy might be going both ways, in which case we could call it perhaps a communication device, the pyramid, and that the beam is being generated using Earth energy by the pyramid to send messages. Who is sending messages? I don't know. What kind of messages might be being sent? Why would anyone need messages to be sent? I don't know. Maybe it's a GPS system to let you know, like there's a cosmic GPS system so that the planets can, without operators of these pyramids, can just always be in connection with each other, and so that someone could tap into this energy and know where planets are at this time, and then if they're going to travel there, something like that. That's just a guess. I don't know. But anyway, he also did some more research, and he found out that there's a shadow effect. He calls it a shadow because we can't measure scalar energy. He's an electrical engineer, and humanity has no instruments to measure scalar energy, which is what Tesla called stationary waves or standing waves, or also non-Hertzian waves, which are waves that actually have more power the further from the source they are, and Hertzian waves have less power the further from the source they are. So non-Hertzian waves, a.k.a. scalar waves. Goran Marjanovic is measuring to try to find out if scalar waves are being generated in this beam, so that it's not just a 28 kilohertz electrical beam, but maybe also a scalar beam, which means that it could be used for communication between galaxies if it's a scalar beam. Because scalar waves travel so much faster than light, so much faster than any kind of electrical energy, he says 20 billion times faster than the speed of light, which is pretty awesome. And I also asked him on video. I've got lots of interviews with him. Scalar Conundrum, just check that out. I've got two interviews, in-depth interviews with him, Scalar Conundrum. He says that the speed of scalar energy is actually infinite. So in other words, it can be slower than infinite, and he calls it 20 billion times faster than the speed of light, which means that if you want to talk to somebody in the next galaxy using scalar energy, you can do so like we talk to each other picking up a phone. It's that quick. That's useful. That's real useful. But then the question is, if scalar energy is being produced by pyramids as part of a, you know, if there's an energy grid that's a scalar grid, a cosmic internet, who's sending messages and what are they saying? I'm not sending a message through the pyramid. Who's sending a message through a pyramid? What's the point, you know, of sending a message through a pyramid? What are you going to do? Say, how's it going? Oh, pretty good, you know, over here in the next galaxy. What's the point of that? That's not the conversation anyone needs to have.
Yeah, are you suggesting that they're still active? They're still actively sending these messages, whatever they are?
Well, I mean, the pyramid is active in its electrical beam that's coming in and or going out of it. So the 28 kilohertz beam is working now. Then the question is there a scalar component? A Serbian electrical engineer, Goran Marjanovic, who started the Tesla Heritage Club in Belgrade, says yes. He says he found the shadow. In other words, we can't measure scalar energy directly, but he says he found the shadow of the electrical phenomenon that tells him that it is a scalar function to this beam. So he's saying, yeah, we found a scalar wave coming out of the pyramid of the sun, and going in at the same time. Now I can go into detail about how scalar energy performs in the universe. If you want, it's a real quick metaphor, just to give people an idea. So because it sounds kind of vague and tenuous.
Yeah, go ahead and do that.
Because I asked him, because I'm a playwright, like I said, and I don't have a mathematical mind. I said, how do I explain to me like I'm a 5-year-old, because that's basically what my mind is when it comes to science. I need you to give me a metaphor. So I tried out a bunch of metaphors on him. I said, how about an accordion? He goes, okay, that would work. So he said, the accordion player is the scalar energy, and the ether, Tesla's ether, is the fabric of the universe that the accordion player is playing. So in other words, a scalar wave compresses and rarefies the fabric of the universe, the ether, just like an accordion player pushes in the accordion and then pulls it out again. So that's what the scalar energy is doing to the fabric of the ether. It's compressing and rarefying it. He also calls it a breathing regime. That's what the Indian philosophers call the living universe. They say it's a breathing regime. It's going in and out, and Goran Marjanovic says that that is the action of the scalar energy. And it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing. So I've got those articles, The Scalar Conundrum. Anybody can find those. Then those point you to his really in-depth, both in English and in Serbian, articles, PDFs, with all the graphs and all the stuff that he found, all the measurements. So you can find those PDFs through my articles. They're way beyond me, you know. I just wanted to get a metaphor out there to the people.
Yeah. I want to talk about the MIMA mounds, because I know that you've referenced them as well as being something that might be indicative of this terraforming that you're talking about. Explain what they are, what they've been taught to be, and then what you think they are.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that gets into the university. I don't want to sound mean, so I'm not even going to go there. The academia has its own way of looking at the world scientifically, and it's the best that has been able to come up with. And I understand, you know, that no one's going to propose, oh yeah, the Earth was built and it was terraformed, and that's where we're going to start. Obviously, no, they're going to go, it must have all been natural. It must have accreted. It's sedimentary, everything is just natural, and then we recently, you know, came to consciousness, and that's the history of our world. But we have these MIMA mounds all across the Earth. There are still some remaining areas of MIMA mounds in the United States, but most of them have been leveled for development. They just took them down with bulldozers. And they're just Earth, so they were easy to take down, super easy. But there are some remaining ones. I'm in Texas now, and there are some in southeastern Texas and eastern Texas, and you can go look at them, and you can see cross sections on the internet. You can go to my article, Who Terraformed the Earth, the Terraforming of Planet Earth, and you can see the images of the cross sections of these MIMA mounds. You can see that you've got the glacial substrate, which is rock, then you've got this loamy soil that creates the MIMA mound, and then you've got another MIMA mound. In other words, there was no earth just sitting around that somebody made MIMA mounds out of, and then on top of, you know, there's just the rock and then the MIMA mounds. Academia tells us that gophers were digging into earth and had mounds that were the result of their digging into earth. So it was all gophers that naturally made these mounds, hundreds of millions of which are still across the earth. Africa has a lot of millions and millions of them. But this can't be, because you can see the cross section. There's no place for the gophers to have dug earth from. It's just glacial rock, and then you've got the pure loamy soil of the MIMA mound. And they're not modeled like a gopher mound would be. They're not. They're perfectly smooth, perfectly roundish. And they just go on, they connect to the next one, they connect to the next one. Then you go, well, if somebody built these MIMA mounds after the glaciation, you know, after the glaciers scoured everything clean, that was pretty recently here on the North American continent.
Right.
Who's building MIMA mounds recently on the North American continent? There's so many mysteries, you know, and what would it be for to build MIMA mounds? You go, well, if they did, somebody, then it must have been an energetic reason. You know, there must have been an energetic component to the curving nature of these mounds that the ancients wanted to somehow mitigate energy or channel energy or something like that. I don't know, you know.
Well, as we put all this together, we look at the Mima mounds, we look at the pyramids both in Bosnia and the Egyptian pyramids in Giza. There are pyramids in South America. You know, you talked about Africa. There's a lot of evidence that supports what you're saying, according to your findings. But when we look at it all together, what is the bottom line here? Are we suggesting that there were advanced intelligent civilizations that were here long before what we're being told was here, which would have been us and the civilization of the human race? Is that the bottom line?
I think there was a mosh pit of sort of civilizations that came and went on planet Earth. And so if you had a videotape of the activity on planet Earth since the beginning, it would just be this incredible, crazy, creative and destructive just activity, like, and then nothing for a while, and then just massive wars and people knocking over, you know, pyramids that someone else built, and then building up their own structures, and then endless, you know, conflicts and then cooperations, and just hundreds of different races with their own agendas.
Are these hundreds of different human races, or are these, could be anything?
Well, you know, I think a lot of your audience probably follow David Wilcock and the idea that, from his insiders, that there are 22 races that sort of oversee genetic experiments with us, that we're like sort of pets to them in a way, or experiments. And that our 22 genetic varieties within the human race, our 22 genetic races, let's say, within the human race, are being observed, managed by 22 separate ET races that live here or inside the Earth, and they're watching us and seeing what we do. So that's an interesting thing. They're insectoid, they're ants, they're mantises, they're humanoids. Wilcox says that his insiders tell him that most of the ET races are humanoid in appearance. They have a five-star pattern, you know, one head, two arms, two legs. But there's a whole lot of other races that aren't, like the mantis race and all these things. So, I mean, those are testimonials. And
I know they're not your theories. Yeah. Those aren't your theories. But are you looking at those theories as possible explanations for everything that you've discovered and the ideas that you're talking about here tonight?
Well, see, that's the thing. We don't have the videotape.
Yeah.
And I think there's too much activity for us. It's like we're looking at clues of so much stuff that went on, so many races that came here and had their own agendas and built and destroyed, that it's like, how do we put the puzzle together? I mean, it's too massive for us to just do it in a few decades, which is what we've had.
And I think part of what you're calling for here, Jock, is for academia, for the scientific community to approach this with a more open mind, right?
I would say that that's a really beautiful way to say it.
Yeah, and probably a kind way, right?
I've been sort of veering toward a little bit judgmental in previous interviews, and I sort of want to steer away from that now because I feel like everybody's doing their best. You know, everybody is.
We had a discussion last night. We were talking about fringe topics in science, and our guest last night was saying essentially the same thing, that the scientific community, for a community that is supposed to be interested in finding the truth, they are awfully closed-minded at times, and we see this throughout history. So it's certainly not a surprise. Listen, we're out of time here, Jock. Give people your YouTube channel again and wherever else they can go to get more information on these ideas that you're talking about.
Well, there's two sites. One's called An American in Bosnia, and that's a WordPress site. That's my newest one. And then the old one, same name, An American in Bosnia, is the Google blog. So those are all Bosnian pyramids and terraforming. And, you know, then there's Who Built the Earth. And then there's the YouTube channels are Bosnian Pyramids, which is the official backup channel for the Archaeological Park Foundation. And then there's my own personal channel, which has lots of stuff about terraforming that's not Bosnian related. And that's Jock Doubleday. So, like I said, don't follow me, or do follow me, whatever you want. It doesn't matter to me. just go toward the information, get outside in your yard, get outside in your area and dig, make a video. Let's see what we can do together to find out who we are.
Thanks for your time, Jack. A very fascinating conversation. Hope to have you back on the program sometime.
I appreciate it, JV. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Find us on YouTube, subscribe, like, follow, whatever you need to do. Do all of those things. And if you're listening as a podcast listener, we very much appreciate that. Share it with your friends. Let them know how they can get a hold of the podcast version of Beyond Reality Radio. A lot of people do that. It's a great way to listen on your morning commute or maybe your afternoon drive home or whatever it happens to be. Or maybe when you're mowing the lawn. We're not going to be mowing the lawn a whole lot longer here, at least in the Northeast. I'm actually kind of looking forward to the cooler weather. I've had a miserably warm summer, Orion. I just have not been able to be comfortable.
I'm looking forward to the insects going bye-bye.
Yeah, been a lot of insects this year, too. Yeah. All right. Thanks for being here, everybody. It's Beyond Reality Radio. We'll see you next week.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and JV Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For JV Johnson, follow at jvjparanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.